Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
A very, very warm welcome to everyone here today on this auspicious occasion here. And of course, we're also remembering the fact that today is the beginning of the Olympics. But this is today the real Olympics. We have wonderful guests with us this evening, and of course they're with us tomorrow morning. So on behalf of all the devotees here, I want to very, very warmly welcome the two individuals, and of course the third individual as well, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, His Holiness Bhakti Chiruswami, and His Grace Kripa Moya Prabhu.
Haribo!
Haribo! Haribo! And I'm just going to give the mic to Kripa Moya Prabhu here.
Hare Krishna. Yes, as Shruti was saying, tonight is the night that some people have been waiting for about 7 years. 7 years ago, it was declared that London would be the site of the Olympics, and people have been waiting for the next 2 weeks for many, many years to come and show their physical prowess. The run-up to the Olympics is the running with a torch, a flame, all over the country, that's first lit by the sun and is carried from country to country, from place to place, and finally comes to the stadium. So you can see where my thoughts are going. It's not about the carriers of the torch, it's about the torch itself. After the torch has been carried by one person and passed on to another person, it's really the torch that we're all following. In our Krishna conscious tradition, we also follow a torch, a flame, mentioned by Lord Krishna, a jnana dipena, jnana dip, the lamp of knowledge. And it's very carefully guarded. It can only be guarded in the heart of a person in whose heart there is no wind. Because if there's wind, then the flame goes out. So this lamp of jnana, this lamp of spiritual knowledge, is passed from person to person. Every guru, every acharya, looks for a qualified disciple to pass on that torch to. And he says, my dear disciple, your job now is to run with this torch and pass it on. Srila Prabhupada was looking for such qualified persons to pass on the torch of Bhakti Vedanta. We have been very privileged tonight, on this auspicious evening, when we're all thinking about flames, torches, and gold standard, to welcome into our midst two of those torchbearers for Srila Prabhupada, who for decades have been carrying Prabhupada's lamp of knowledge and devotion all over the world. One came from the west and went east. One came from the east and spends a lot of time in the west. But wherever they go, they give the teachings that Prabhupada gave. And in their windless hearts, they keep that flame burning bright. I would now like to invite both of them to kindly speak to us on this night of Sadhu Sangha, a night when we count it as a great opportunity to come and listen to enlightened and enlightening words. His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Ki Jai. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.
Om
Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschata Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shibashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I always used to consider Kripamai Prabhu to be a great singer. But whenever I listen to him, I become aware what a great speaker also he is. The one who speaks with profound realizations. And I was thinking what a brilliant example he gave, just taking the cue from the Olympics, carrying the torch, carrying the spiritual torch, and the importance of developing a situation in the heart that the flame of the torch not only doesn't become extinguished, but doesn't flicker as well. That wind in the heart, the waves of the thoughts, especially mundane thoughts, that make that flame to flicker, and it should brilliantly display its light without being wavered. Jnana Deepena Bhashyata. I was thinking what a brilliant example you gave. And thank you. I was also thinking another example I very much appreciated from a speech that Kripamaya Prabhu gave in one Rath Yatra festival. He was describing that festival is the festival of kidnapping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In London, Rath Yatra, you're giving the speech, and it occurred to me, it's such a brilliant example that and it did happen, and that was actually the case. The Brajabasis kidnapped the prince. I mean, as it is, kidnapping is a big offense, and what to speak of kidnapping the prince? And the queen, the principal queen, Rukmini Devi, when she got the news, she was outraged. She was extremely angry. She immediately called the army to come along and came to Vrindavan, raided Vrindavan. And she arrested the residents of Vrindavan for kidnapping the prince. And that is actually celebrated on the third day after the Rath Yatra festival, a festival called Hera Panchami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to have enacted a drama on that day. And the drama was the drama of Rukmini coming with the army, arresting the Brajabasis, and then having a trial. And in the trial, Rukmini was the judge, and the defending lawyer was Lalita Devi, and the public prosecutor was Narad Muni Srivash Thakur. And a deep argument actually took place between these two lawyers. And then finally, who won? Vrindavan side won, pleaded by Lalita Devi. And the point came up, why Krishna in Dwarka, who has everything, why Krishna's heart is always in Vrindavan? When Krishna is awake, Krishna is always absent-minded, as if his mind is somewhere else. And when he goes to sleep at night, Krishna starts to speak in dream, to calling out to the residents of Vrindavan. So this way the queens could see, Rukmini Devi could see, that Krishna's heart is always in Vrindavan. So she was questioning, what is there in Vrindavan that Krishna's heart is always there? And in spite of having everything in Dwarka, Krishna is not at all interested. So then Lalita Devi gave the answer. And Lalita Devi's role was played by Swarup Damodar Swami. And he made that point, that in Vrindavan, all the trees are desire trees, the land is Chintamani, the cows are Surabhi cows, and so in Vrindavan, if they want it, they could have everything. Because all these three can award or can fulfill any desire. Desire trees can fulfill any desire. The cows, Surabhi cows, can fulfill any desire, and so does Chintamani. But in Vrindavan, the devotees do not want anything else but Krishna. All they want is Krishna. And therefore Krishna feels that he is not qualified enough to respond properly. So that's why his heart is always in Vrindavan. So it is not that they kidnapped Krishna. Krishna himself wanted to come there. They simply added as an instrument. Anyway, in that Ratha Yatra festival, quite some years ago actually, must have been about 7-8 years, you were speaking from Ratkat. And so you gave that beautiful example of this, the festival of kidnapping the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his devotees. Now we have a very wonderful devotee in our midst, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So now we all are eager to hear from him. Hare Krishna.
Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Aschajyate shatharine Bansha kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna. I am very grateful to be with you this evening. Thank you, Kripa Maya Prabhu, for your eloquent words. Thank you, Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, for your deep heartfelt wisdom. And thank all of you for being here. Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj was quoting Kripa Maya Prabhu in how Krishna is very pleased to be kidnapped by his devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu extended that analogy to tell how it was his great pleasure to be the prisoner in the heart of his devotees. No one wants to be a prisoner. People will do whatever necessary, whatever money they have somehow or other to avoid becoming a prisoner. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was describing the glories of Haridas Thakur, he said to Haridas and to the whole world that I am the prisoner in the heart of Haridas Thakur, forever shackled by the chains of his devotion. In this case, Haridas Thakur was the Nam Acharya. He was teaching us by his example. And practically every story we read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, about Haridas Thakur is stories about very difficult challenges he had to overcome. Why the Nam Acharya, the person who is specially selected to teach us how to chant the holy names, he's always being put in difficult situations. The first story we read about him, he was living in Benapole, and Ramchandra Khan sent that prostitute to somehow or other make him fall down so that he could be arrested and beaten, punished and tortured for being a hypocrite. In other words, there were people who hated him so bitterly due to envy, they wanted to destroy him. And how did Haridas pass through that? To the very person who came to destroy him, he somehow or other convinced her to just wait and listen to the chanting, ultimately initiated her, and ultimately gave her his little hut. And she started chanting, 3 lakhs a day? And then the next thing we hear is he goes to Chandpur, and in Chandpur, Haridas Thakur is asked by Balaram Acharya and Yadunandan Acharya to speak on the glories of the holy names. And therein he said, the goal of chanting is not material benefits. The goal of chanting is not getting yogic powers. The goal of chanting isn't even liberation. The goal of chanting is prema bhakti, pure, unadulterated, unconditional love for Krishna. And liberation is just an insignificant byproduct of prema bhakti, pure love. He gave the example that before the sun actually shows itself on the horizon, the whole sky becomes light. In the same way, before prema bhakti even raises in the heart, one becomes liberated from all darkness. And there was someone in the audience, Gopal Chakravarti, who couldn't tolerate it. This man was a very intellectual, very charismatic Brahmin. He was screaming at Thakur Haridas, what you are saying is misleading, it's hypocritical. You are blaspheming mukti, the ultimate goal. If what you are saying is not true, then I curse that your nose will fall off. He sang this in public. And Haridas Thakur just said, I'm sorry, but it's true. Anyways, Ramchandra got leprosy and his nose fell off. I mean, not Ramchandra, Gopal Chakravarti. And then Haridas Thakur was at another meeting where, you know, he was just describing to the innocent people about the glories of the holy name. And a whole group of priests, they gathered around him and began to blaspheme him so badly. They were saying, just see, the prophecy of the scriptures has come true. A malecha, a filthy, dirty, sinful man is now misleading the world by giving his interpretation of the scriptures. Haridas Thakur could do nothing but walk away. And then he went to Fuliagram, where he met Advaitacharya. And Sri Advaita gave him a cave to live in on the bank of the Ganga. And there he was just chanting the holy names, and anybody who he met, he was sharing the gift of prema, of Krishna love with the people. And he started becoming influential. So the Brahmins, they couldn't tolerate it, because they were charging so much money to do yajnas and everything and chant mantras, and this person saying all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna and get the highest goal. So they hated him. And many of the people of the Mughal Empire were being transformed into devotees, so the Mughal king hated him. So they called him and they sentenced him to be beaten through 22 marketplaces, tortured, and killed. And he was beaten through those 22 marketplaces, brutally, in public. And he just kept chanting and chanting. And he was feeling, he was begging, the whole time he was begging Krishna, whatever benefits I've gotten from my spiritual life, throughout my life, I'm willing to sacrifice all of it if you just forgive them and give them your love. He's saying about this, about toward the people who were trying to kill him with hate. And ultimately, after 22 marketplaces, they said, Haridas, we're too tired to beat you anymore, and now we're going to be killed because we cannot kill you. The whole time we're beating you, you're looking at us while chanting the names of the Lord, and you're looking at us with pity. What can we do? And Haridas said, oh, if my life is an inconvenience to you, see what I will do. And he chanted Krishna's name, and all of his life symptoms disappeared. So they took his body and brought it to the king. The king said, bury him. And the Qazi said, no, if he's buried, he will get a good destination. Burn him. And the Hindu Brahmin said, no, don't burn him. If he's burned, then he'll be freed of his sins. So what do we do with him? Just throw him in the river like a piece of garbage. So they threw him. And he went underwater, and after some time he came out. And if you or me came out, we would probably go hide in the forest somewhere. But he went right back to the village, directly to the king and the Qazi and the executioners, just to say, I'm still here. And at that point, they had to surrender. So there's just every story about Haridas Thakur practically is a story of being misunderstood, being hated, being persecuted, trying to destroy him, everything else. And he's the Namacharya. But the dignity in which he took shelter of the holy names in every situation was such a sign of an expression of his love that Lord Chaitanya said, Haridas, I am a prisoner in your heart. It is impossible for me to leave your heart. I'm bound by the chains of your love. And that is the Lord's greatest pleasure. I guess I have to connect it to the Olympics in order to keep the continuity of my two esteemed predecessors. In other words, when you are on the path back to Godhead, there will be many hurdles. And, you know, in Krishna consciousness, we really have to take shelter to be able to. Sometimes we hit a hurdle and we fall down, but we have to just get back up and keep going. That is grace, the power of Krishna's grace. Tate nukam, what is that Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita? That for those who are sincere and who are trying to surrender to me honestly, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. Krishna can help us cross oceans. Even the vast ocean of material existence becomes reduced to the quantity of water contained in the footprint of a calf. For one who surrenders to Murari. So can you imagine the Olympics where you have to do 100 laps in a swimming pool? But if you take shelter of Krishna, it becomes reduced to this much. Otherwise, you have to. But God helps those who help themselves. We can't just expect Krishna to solve our problems. When we do everything within our power to live with dignity, integrity, character, and at the same time we're taking shelter of Krishna, knowing that Daivi Heshu Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya. Maya is very strong. And Krishna will be there for us. And that's so beautiful. Haridas Thakur was the very embodiment of Trinadapi Sunichena. He had such humility. When we truly humble ourselves to take shelter of the Lord supremely humbles Himself to be a prisoner in our hearts. And this is the torch, the flame that we're all trying to hold on to through whatever may come in our life. This knowledge that Krishna, who is all beautiful, who is the supreme Karuna Sindhu, the unlimited ocean of compassion, has appeared in His holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And in this world of uncertainties, we have faith in that one certainty, that Krishna has descended in His name. And Srila Prabhupada, He has come to travel the whole world around, given us so many books, given us a society and a culture where we could cultivate that faith, taking shelter of Krishna's names, that divine sound vibration. And that is possible when we find shelter in those who take shelter of the holy names. I'm here to seek shelter of both of you. Thank you very, very much.
Perhaps there are some questions for the Maharajas. I'll take this microphone and we'll pass it around. And then these two microphones we can use for Bhakti Charaswami and Radhanath Swami.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you have given us practical instructions for surrendering, starting the process of surrender. I just wonder, how do we assess that we have even begun the process of attempting to surrender? Even to surrender seems of such a big order, but even just to even begin the process, how do we know that we have actually embarked on that path? It seems always such a distant thing, such a theoretical thing, that would we ever be able to achieve that? How do we progress towards that, Maharaj?
Hare. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. One of
his incredible contributions to the world was he could take the most esoteric, deepest, profound philosophical concepts and make it so tangible and practical. It's very simple. For us to surrender is to honestly be endeavoring to follow the sacred teachings. Are we sincerely trying to chant our rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra according to the instructions? Are we sincerely and honestly trying to follow these four regulative principles? Are we sincerely trying to live by the very clear qualities of a Vaishnava? To be forgiving rather than to be vengeful. To be honest rather than being duplicitous. When we're given a service, with determination to try to execute it, to try to fulfill it, to try to please our Guru Srila Prabhupada, the Vaishnavas. To deal with other Vaishnavas with a manina manadena, really trying to be respectful and not demanding respect for ourselves. These are very clear things. They're not theoretical. They're all things that we can strive to do. And if we're sincerely, honestly trying to do it, not for fame and prestige and power, but to purify our hearts and to please Krishna, then we can know 100% for sure that we are on the path of surrendering. We just continue. These simple instructions of performing our sadhana, to try to understand Prabhupada's books sincerely. You know, if we're living in the temple, to come to the morning program. These are simple, tangible things, but we do it for the right purpose. To get love for Krishna, to please Krishna. And when we live with good character, good morality, and we're trying our best, that is surrender. It's nothing so secret and esoteric that how will I know? If we're just honest and sincere, we should know. Are we trying? With all our faults, are we trying to? Then we're surrendering. And that's all that Prabhupada asked of us. It's to sincerely try our very best. And if we make a mistake, you know, to learn from that mistake and try our best. He's given us so many beautiful, beautiful stories, analogies, philosophical teachings in his books, in his lectures. If we just try to live by these principles, that is surrender. And if we do it sincerely, without ulterior motives, then Krishna will give us pure devotional service. That is his promise. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and complicated for the crooked. So if we're simple, then surrender is actually simple. Of course, you're simple, but you're a doctor and all that stuff, so you so you analyze stuff. So I'm giving you a simple analysis, and that's good enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Sometimes we hear from some devotees that it's said to be conscious, before we become Krishna conscious, just to be conscious. Could you just elaborate on that, and does that apply, and what does it actually mean?
Who said that?
I've heard it from a few devotees. I've heard this. And they've said
Before becoming Krishna conscious, you have to become conscious.
Yeah.
Okay. Consciousness is the symptom of life. There is matter and there is spirit. Matter is inert, spirit is conscious. It's because of the presence of the spirit soul in the body made of matter that the body becomes conscious or alive. So, consciousness is the symptom of spiritual aspect of our existence. So, now the consciousness is inherent with the spirit soul. Just like light is inherent with fire, similarly consciousness is inherent with the spirit soul. Now, when the spirit soul becomes entrapped in the material nature, or when a spirit soul loses his connection with Krishna, then he develops his material consciousness, or rather his consciousness is projected towards the material nature through the subtle body and then through the gross body. And this is how a spirit soul becomes entrapped in the material nature. But a spirit soul is a spiritual being. His original situation is in the spiritual nature. Therefore, the spirit soul's entrapment in the material nature is the cause of his suffering. Prabhupada gives the example of a fish out of water. How will the fish feel? No matter how much you offer to the fish from the land, the fish will not be happy. Fish will not be satisfied. But the moment you take the fish back into water, he'll start to jump with joy. So that's why our situation in the material nature is full of suffering, full of misery. So when we become aware of that fact by coming in contact with a self-realized soul, a devotee of the Lord, then we get to know about our actual situation, and then we also find the process from him how to become situated in that actual situation. And that situation is that we have to re-establish our relationship with Krishna. Then only we can go back to the spiritual sky and become situated in our spiritual identity. In this respect, an example can be given. A spark is tiny fire. Spark is fire. But when the spark comes out of the fire, it loses its fiery quality, and falling on a heap of ash, it is transformed into ash. It was actually fire, but now it lost its fiery qualities and became ash. Now, when we take that speck of inflammable object, which used to be a spark at one time, back to fire, what will happen? It will regain its fiery quality just by coming in contact with the fire. Similarly, when a living entity becomes connected to Krishna again, then he automatically assumes his spiritual identity. So the process is connection to Krishna, and that connection to Krishna is considered to be or called Krishna consciousness. The consciousness, when it is projected towards matter, or consciousness when it is projected away from Krishna, we are in material consciousness. We are conditioned. Prabhupada identified that situation as conditioned state of our existence. But when we project our consciousness back onto Krishna, that process is called Krishna consciousness, and that is the way to become situated in our spiritual identity. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
This question really is based for the young devotees here. And advice from yourself in balancing their life at this stage, in between education, growing up, and so forth, and balancing that life between devotion as well, and having the advice of where to balance your life and what's important in this very, very important part of their lives, especially education, to try and split between spending a lot of time studying and a lot of time in devotion. So just to give the youngsters advice of how to balance the both, to feel the benefit of both, and being able to appreciate both for the next few years of their life, which are very, very important. Thank you.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, he really gave us a very balanced approach to Krishna consciousness. Even devotees who were living in the temple, they would have three hours of a morning program. Then we would go out and do various types of services till evening, when they would come back and again engage in devotional activities. That was for people in the temple. What to speak of people in congregation or people who are doing studies? We have to make our priorities, because the human tendency is to be extreme. Either we're orthodox or we're liberal, but it takes a lot of thoughtfulness to be balancing the two. In the sense of studies, either we just study, and we don't have time for Krishna, or we just do sadhana, and we come to the temple and do this, and we have no time for study. Either way is kind of easy. The challenge is to balance them. That means we have to give priority to both. We regulate our lives where we have this much time
to chant the holy names. We have this much time to come and associate with devotees, with sadhus. And we have this much time that we have to put into our studies or our career or whatever it may be. I'll give you a couple examples. Because examples sometimes make things accessible. There was a medical student. He was a very excellent medical student in a college. And at that dormitory where he lived, we had regular programs where people were chanting and doing kirtan and giving Gita classes. And he was a devotee. He was chanting 16 rounds every day. He was reading Bhagavad Gita. He was coming to regular satsangs. He was doing little seva. But he studied real hard. And he was the top of the class. He was the top of the class, balancing things so nicely. For 4 years. Then came the final exams. And he decided he had to really, really study for the final exams. So he decided, I'm not going to go to any satsang. I'm not going to do any japa. I'm just going to totally focus on my final exams. And for about 4 months, that's all he did. He put aside all his devotional activities and totally concentrated on his studies. Then the final exams came. And guess what? He was in the top of the entire school in his grades. That's not the end of the story. So his friends in the dormitory, who were devotees, they said, okay, you know, you did it. Tonight there's a satsang. And there's going to be a nice kirtan. It's right in our dormitory. There's going to be a nice lecture. Come. And he said, I have one more thing. There's a party for all the people who did the best in their exams. And I'm the topper. So I have to go to this party. So he went to the party. And they were playing Bollywood music. And he was in the dance floor, dancing to Bollywood music. He was 23 years old, and suddenly he dropped on the floor, dead of a cardiac arrest. There are so many witnesses, all the students. He died of a heart attack. He had no medical problem that anybody knew about at that time. Now, certainly, he has been elevated to a higher destination because of Neha Bhikkhu Vanasosti Pratyavayo Nivedyate, because of all the wonderful devotional service he did, he's certainly going to be blessed. And certainly, people were heartbroken when it happened, all the devotees. But at the same time, there was a lesson. The lesson is, what was it really all for? When he needed his spiritual strength the most, the time of death, he was the most unprepared. Now I'll give another example. We have a devotee who had a big corporation, and big corporation. And India changed their laws as far as economic relationships with other countries. And they invited foreigners to come in and make huge investments. So almost everybody in this particular person's sector of business went into bankruptcy. It was impossible to compete. The laws were totally against. He had tens and thousands of employees. In India, you can't fire an employee. You have to compensate every one of them if you want to lay them off. If there's not, you know, if you're trying, you can't just close down your business. He went through years of struggling with tax, with
government. We're trying to sell off property. We're trying to pay all these people. Almost every single person I talked to, big person in the stock exchange who's a devotee, he told me almost everyone else in this sector of business was going to psychiatrists, to psychologists. Many committed suicide. Many went into deep depression. And this devotee, he worked so hard to try to arrange everything. But at the same time, he was at the temple every morning to chant his rounds. At the same time, during Prabhupada's Guru Puja, he'd be dancing in bliss. And then he'd go out and have to do what practically none of us has ever had to do, to endeavor with such complication, implication, and repercussions. And he brought the whole company out of it, and now it's very successful. But he never gave up chanting. He never gave up coming and being with devotees. He balanced it. Where there's a will, there's a way. If we understand the importance of our spiritual lives, we will give the sufficient time for it. And if we understand that our studies are for Krishna, we will put our full energy into our studies when we're meant to study, and we'll put our full energy into our sadhana when we're meant to do our sadhana and seva. And from a spiritual perspective, applying that balance is real intelligence. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Let's have some people.